Good morning. You have tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week. It is Friday, November 8th, 2024. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm here with Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How are you today?
I'm doing well, and we're joined this morning by Zach Hagedon for the second time this week. It is a busy election week, of course, and we're going to be talking a little further about the results as well as other news in our area. I will run down the headlines right now. We also have a recording that I made yesterday evening with Mike Rosedale, the county clerk, about the election results that we'll play for right after these headlines. Locally, for those who didn't hear, the Republicans made a clean sweep of all the contested races in Bonner County and in Legislative District 1. This means Mark Sauter, the incumbent, will return as House Representative in seat 1A. Cornell Razor, also the incumbent, although he did not fill a full term last year or last time around, will sit in House seat 1B. Jim Woodward, the Republican, will be serving as state senator. And on the Bonner County Commission in District 1, Brian Domke, the Republican, will be serving as commissioner. And for District 3, Ron Korn, another Republican incumbent who hadn't filled a full term yet but had taken his seat already, will be filling that seat for the next term in Commissioner District 3. Statewide, the Proposition 1 amendment failed. The ranked choice voting and open primaries initiative failed to pass. The state constitutional amendment prohibiting immigrants from voting in elections did pass. Republicans gained 4 seats in the state legislature here in Idaho, expanding their supermajority in Boise. And moving on to some local news at the county. The Bonner County Board of Commissioners approved the final Camp Bay Trail agreement, pending some revisions. There's an interesting headline in this morning's Daily Bee that Steve Bradshaw, the current sitting commissioner for District 1, is alleged by Scott Herndon to have sold his property in Idaho and vacated and moved to Texas, and that his and that the Bonner County Republican Central Committee now has the right to fill that seat with an appointee, or to nominate 3 nominees to the governor, and that the seat can then be filled. Of course, Bradshaw didn't actually run for re-election, and Bradshaw disputes this claim by Scott Herndon. I have only just skimmed that piece, and I look forward to talking about it more with the two of you. Maybe you've got a better grasp of the situation. Here in town, the traffic light is on at 5th and Pine. Those of you who have been paying attention to my morning commute know that that's been flummoxing me for some time, and now I'm...
So Jack, the question is, does it help?
That is a question.
For your commute in?
I would say for me personally, it seems to help because you get a gap. You find a gap in the traffic. My observation is that the line now at the Boyer traffic light, Highway 2 and Boyer, that line seems longer than it was before to me. I don't know if they're still making tweaks to the kind of the timing to make that happen, but it does seem like now that traffic backs almost around to the corner of 5th and Pine.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see long lines on 5th. Mm-hmm. They're wanting to turn left onto Pine Street. Mm-hmm. There's room for like 3 cars there in the turn lane, and then it's going to kind of go back onto the travel lane, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens when summer comes, because that's when we'll see all the traffic
there. Yeah. And then a very interesting art item that in the reader here, tribal artifacts uncovered during MacArthur Lake Project in Boundary County could kind of rewrite our understanding of the history of the area in terms of its inhabited possibly up to 4,000 years before we previously understood.
Right.
If I read that article correctly. And a very interesting development kind of in the historical sense, and we can talk more about that. I'm going to, right now, I think I'm going to switch things over and play that and play that recording that I made with County Clerk Rosedale, unless I missed any big headlines that you want to address
before I do that. I think he covered it. Good time. Okay. We'll jump in and see what he tells us about the turnout specifically, right?
That's right. Yep. Okay. And with that, here we go. The next voice you hear will be mine, but it'll be recorded yesterday afternoon.
Okay. I'm here in the county clerk's office once again. We were here 1 week ago looking at early returns, trying to get kind of a forecast of how the election was going to go. County Clerk Michael Rosedale, did it go as you expected here in Bonner County? Was it?
It went differently than I expected. Thanks for having me on, by the way, Jack.
Mm-hmm.
It went differently. We had a boatload of people, which I was expecting after our early vote. Our early vote was roughly three times. I mean, it was off the chart. We had a bunch of absentees, so that was hot. We ended up earlier than I thought, but we had different kinds of issues, different kinds of problems. We just had so many people from the opening doors at 8 o'clock all the way to 8 at night, mm-hmm. overwhelming our polling places. We had a record turnout. We had roughly, or exactly, 29,929 voters, which is 86.63%. And that's, I don't think we've ever been higher than that. That's huge.
Yeah.
And part of that is we've, over the last 4 or 8 years, and I think you might have talked about this before, mm-hmm. but over that time, we've had a huge influx of people to Bonner County, mm-hmm. and a high percentage voted. And so many of them registered for the first time, which is a huge time sink when you're trying to mm-hmm. run voters through, circulate them through. And so it was just a huge lift.
Do you know how many people were first-time voters or who had registered on the day of?
I don't know that. That's okay. Part of the process we're going through now. We're going to have a canvas next Thursday at 10 a.m. here at the county.
Okay.
That kind of information will be available then, but we're still doing the paperwork.
Are you able to say, like, from the precincts, turnout was up pretty much everywhere? Did it spike any particular precinct or anything?
You know, I can't tell you which one. I do know everywhere was swamped. We sent out basically 100% grand total of registered voters ballot-wise, mm-hmm. and we had some precincts saying basically they're on the verge of running out of ballots. So they're very close. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That and new registration cards, we sent about another 100, 150, an additional 100 or 150 per precinct, and we had to race some additional ones out to precincts because that was not enough.
Mm-hmm. I have one question here. Are we reading the numbers correct that in the county commission race, there were 20 county commission races, like Domke versus Johnson, for example, which is a partisan race, but there were like 28,500 votes cast.
Yeah, well, we had a grand total of 29,929. Yeah. That means some people didn't vote.
Yeah, and then in the same, in the legislative district one race, so the same pool of voters, but the combined vote totals for the Souder and Mate race, which is again a Democrat and Republican, was like 24,000.
Yes.
Okay. So it's correct to say that a lot fewer people voted in the Souder Mate race than voted, like,
correct.
Fewer people voted for the legislative races than for the county races.
So that writer is correct.
Yeah. That's, that's interesting. Any guesses why about 4,000 people would vote for president and commissioner but not in the legislative district race?
They didn't want either.
Yeah, just didn't know. Or didn't want either or didn't know.
Right.
Maybe. Oh, good point. Let's see. Any interesting stories coming out of the polling places on election day? That
we had a couple.
Yeah.
Some were that people's worried about electioneering. So the issue there was within 250 feet, you can't actively electioneer.
Mm-hmm.
The definition of electioneer changed. The AG's office apparently told the Secretary of State via, you know, an opinion letter, mm-hmm. what constitutes electioneering. It's active versus passive, and that's the new key thing. So passive is you wearing something or a hat, or so you could wear your team's favorite colors. Yeah. That's okay, but you can't hand out literature. You can't talk. You can't stop a car. That's active. So that was the big thing. We had some people saying, hey, there's somebody here with, you know, XYZ colors. Mm-hmm. We don't want them here. We had some people complaining about American flags. That's not called for. I mean, mm-hmm. everybody should want an American flag on Election Day.
Mm-hmm.
We had that. That was one one thing. We had an issue with people trying to register to vote. That's another thing that changed over the past 2 years since we had a big general election like this. Now you have to have an Idaho driver's license as opposed to any state's active driver's license. Mm. So it has to be Idaho. They've limited the types of ID you can use that are valid. And whereas before we could work with somebody trying to establish their residence, they also limited that. They prescribed exactly what types of things qualify for proof of residence.
Mm-hmm.
So that made it difficult.
Yeah. I don't know. Any other final takeaways from the big election before
We had a couple cases of, you know, somebody getting the wrong ballot, or like they're in a district and they got the mm-hmm. wrong district. So we're sorting through all that. It didn't change any races, but we still don't like to see that happen. We're gonna mm-hmm. we're gonna sweep up and double down on our efforts that way. We're gonna you know, try to color code our ballots next time for the poll workers. Hmm. Make sure they issue the right one, type of thing. It wasn't consequential, but I still hate to see that happen.
Yeah, understandable. Well, thank you. I mean, I think the reviews are across the board bipartisan that the polling places were. I mean, everybody who ran the election locally did a great job.
And glad to hear it.
You know,
thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thanks very much for your time. And oh yeah,
one other thing I want to say is the mm-hmm. one thing that makes Bonner County and this part of the Idaho so great is we all vote differently, but mm-hmm. we all stay neighbors, and generally we all get along really well. And so mm-hmm. I know things have shifted a little bit in some regards, but let's stay neighbors. We have more elections coming up, but let's mm-hmm. let's keep this part of the country awesome by staying neighbors and making it through the next 2, 4, 6, 8 years, whatever, mm-hmm. whatever it is until the next, whatever.
The next time we're all at the polls again.
That's right.
Okay. Well, County Clerk Michael Rosedale for Bonner County, thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you.
All right.
Welcome back. We're live here in the studio at 88.5 KRFY. You're listening to North Idaho News of the Week. I'm Jack Peterson with Chris Bessler, and Zach Hagedon is here from the Sandpoint Reader. We were all just listening to that conversation from Mike Rosedale. The results are in, and it was 80. He says a record-setting election results in terms of turnout here. I believe it. That's at 84. That's higher than the national average by something like 20%.
So it was interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, when we were talking about the election on Wednesday, we were looking at the first results. It was early. Right. We hadn't had a chance to talk to him. And I added together the numbers that had voted in the legislative race, thinking, oh, that probably reflects the entire vote because you have two people to vote on. That's why I said on Wednesday, it looks like the turnout's actually lower. But as it turns out, it was a record turnout, but over 4,000 people just didn't vote in those legislative races. That's kind of interesting.
Well, I think that totally reflects the sort of the I don't want either one sort mm-hmm. of mentality. And lest we forget, you know, Jim Woodward was our senator for two terms, and during that time, he ran afoul of the Central Committee, the Republican Central Committee here locally, and also, you know, at the state level, and he was censured.
Right.
And Mark Sauter also was censured.
Oh, that's right.
For not, you know, being Republican enough.
Yeah. Yeah. So a good guess would be that the people that are really aligned with the Central Committee said, no, we don't have a Republican on the ballot we can vote for here.
Right. And Dan Rose, as the independent candidate in that Senate race against Woodward, I mean, Rose is also controversial among the Central Committee. So I could definitely see why voters on that sort of like Central Committee, sort of farther right mentality wouldn't want to cast their ballot for anybody in those races. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that makes total sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say that compared to the presidential results, it does look like Mark Sauter was about 3,000 votes shy of Donald Trump's vote total here in Bonner County, and Cornell Razor was actually even shorter of that. Catherine Larson outran Kamala Harris in Bonner County. Catherine Larson got about 200 votes more than Kamala Harris did. And Karen Mattei came in underneath that. The Sauter's percentage of the vote at 75, he was 75% of the vote. Karen Mattei got 25% of the vote and only about 6,000 votes. So she came in a little less popular than Kamala Harris. Or I guess another way of saying that is we can probably assume that some people voted for Kamala Harris and also voted for Mark Sauter. Just a little note there. The totals, I'm just looking at this now, are the totals for the Democratic candidates are pretty comparable. The vote numbers are pretty comparable to what they were in 2016 locally. And for the Republicans, the vote totals are dramatically higher. You know, 5,000 to 10,000 votes more for the Republicans on our state ballot than, or on our legislative district ballot than there were in 2016. So, you know, the if we kind of discount 2020 as a strange year with COVID and a lot of absentee ballots, that's the last presidential election year that had strong voter turnout. That was the year that Kate McAllister ran for the Democratic seat, and that was about as close, I think, as the race between the Democrats and Republicans ever got in House seat A recently.
Well, let's turn to kind of today's breaking news about this.
Okay, Zach, what do you know about this? what's going on at the county
between Herndon and Bradshaw, where Herndon is. Right. Moving to get Bradshaw off the commission before the term ends.
Right. We weren't able to have this story in the paper, of course, because we came out on Thursday. And I received, along with Carolyn Lobsinger from the Daily Bee, we both received an email from Scott Herndon, who's the chair of the Bonner County Republican Central Committee, yesterday. You know, he also included sort of Commissioner-elect Ron Korn and Commission Chair Asia Williams on that email, where he was communicating to, I guess, all of us that, according to his interpretation of Idaho code, Bradshaw has been absent enough from his position as District 1 commissioner that he should be considered, you know, no longer functioning in that office.
He's missed a number of commission meetings,
He hasn't been at many of them. I haven't done the numbers yet to find out exactly how much absenteeism Bradshaw has experienced. And I haven't really analyzed the code sections that Herndon has cited. So I'm just kind of going off what he said. And I know the Bee had a story in it on this in today's paper. I haven't read that yet either. But just based on what I heard directly from Chairman Herndon was that, you know, Bradshaw has apparently sold off property here, vacated his position as a pastor at his church. He's clearly not been attending commissioner meetings for at least the past couple of weeks. Apparently he's bought some property down in Texas with intentions to move there. Therefore, Herndon, representing the Central Committee, says that the time is now to begin the process toward sort of replacing him ahead of January when Brian Domke would be normally sworn in as his replacement, because Bradshaw didn't run for re-election for his commissioner seat. He did run for sheriff, so he had to step down from his reelection, you know, as a commissioner to run for that. So when he lost to Darrell Wheeler in the primary, he was functionally no longer, you know, serving the county until January. And so we're all kind of familiar, I guess, with the process of how you replace somebody since we've had two of these instances in the past couple of months, which I don't remember ever being a thing. I can't remember the last time prior to this year when we've had so many people resigning ahead of the end of their term and have to be replaced by the Central Committee, which, you know, Jack, you were alluding to earlier, requires the committee to gather up three nominees. Those nominees are voted on by the committee. They come up with, you know, a slate or whatever, and then they send them to the governor. The governor then chooses one, and then that person serves out the remainder of the vacant term.
Mm-hmm. And both Ron Korn and Cornell Razor, they're serving as appointed
They're not
incumbents,
really,
I guess.
Or, yeah, I mean, so I was kind of corrected a little bit about a week or two ago with the reference to them as incumbents, because they're not really incumbents. They weren't elected. Mm-hmm. They're more interim.
Mm.
So the use of the word incumbent maybe is a little misleading. They're interim office holders.
Mm-hmm.
They won't become truly elected officials until January when they're sworn in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just kind of a small point. But I think the internal politics are interesting with this whole thing with Bradshaw and Herndon and the committee. They've clearly run afoul of each other over the years, and it sort of further illustrates those internal splits among various factions within the Central Committee and the local Republican Party writ large. Here we are. I mean, we're seeing it like right out in the open. They're going to have a special meeting, excuse me, set for Tuesday, the 19th of November.
The November 19th, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. At, I think, 6:15 p.m. at the Pondere Event Center, if I'm not mistaken.
That's just ahead of the regular Central Committee meeting.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was, there was a sort of internal email back and forth where Bradshaw was resisting Herndon and his assertions, you know, that Bradshaw needed to be replaced. At one point saying, you know, like, nice try, Scotty boy, in one of the emails that we received. I feel like I'm okay to quote from that since it was sent to reporters.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Herndon, he stuck to his guns and said, you know, the Central Committee will go forward with this meeting, and so Bradshaw's going to have to kind of like it or lump it, I guess. I mean,
well, yeah, it's interesting who the controlling authority here is, and I guess maybe the governor will have to accept these nominees, right? And
assuming that the code sections are being interpreted correctly by Herndon, but, you know, and say what you will about Scott Herndon, he does know his code.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I have not adjudicated the code sections myself, so I can't really speak, you know, personally to that, but I feel like Herndon appears to be very confident that he's on the right side of the law. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Bradshaw, again, should be noted, he and former Commissioner Luke Ahmet were also censured by the Central Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Although in that vote, the committee voted not to censure them. I mean, they were brought up for a sort of trial, I guess, and then they were found innocent. So there is bad blood that has been clearly publicly exposed, you know, between these various parties.
Well, see, these guys are keeping reporters in the ink here.
I appreciated that, actually, to get a heads up.
So we'll see what happens November 19th there, I guess. And
I was jealous of the Bee that they were able to get a story on it.
You know, yeah. Well, that's
just because of the deadline.
The advantage of the daily paper. Because this all just broke out yesterday, right?
Yeah, it was yesterday sometime in the morning, I guess, is when I heard about it.
Yeah.
So,
I was just going to say, I mean, we're going to follow up on this, and I'm sure it's going to be very interesting to talk about next week and the week after that, after the meeting. But I mean, I had never heard of this happening where the political body declares against the candidate's will, declares the seat vacant. You know, I mean, that Herndon can just say, your seat now is vacant, Mr. Bradshaw. Like, I declare it. You know, like, Bradshaw doesn't have to resign.
Right.
He, in fact, is disputing the resignation.
Right.
And I guess, as you just said, that the governor is going to decide whether he appoints somebody or not. But then Herndon, even if the governor doesn't make a choice, Herndon hypothetically could appoint somebody. But then what happens if Bradshaw shows up to work on the same day as
I mean, this is fair. It's pretty unprecedented. I mean, the wave of resignations we've had locally in our offices are unprecedented. And so the process itself is a little bit foreign to a lot of us. I would assume that, you know, the governor would be the ultimate authority when it comes to confirming a replacement.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's dispute over the interpretation of the code, then I imagine the attorney general's office would get involved, you know, to make a ruling about the interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't. It's I'm going to need a couple of days to really exactly where the code stands and how it's interpreted. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, this would rest with, you know, sort of the governor and the AG, depending on what the outcome is.
And I mean, this is kind of it. It seems to me almost like the implications of this are larger than just the what happens with Bradshaw's seat for the remaining month of his term.
Right.
Because if it turns out that the Bonner County Central Committee can, against a sitting commissioner's will, vacate their seat
right.
and appoint a replacement, that is an immense amount of power.
It seems like
that would shift to the Bonner County Central Committee.
Well, and if you set that precedent sort of at the state level, you would be massively expanding the powers of these central committees.
Yes.
And this has been a controversial point statewide.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen instances in sort of southeast Idaho, I guess, last year, maybe the year before,
mm-hmm.
where the state party actually had to bring a central committee to heel because mm-hmm. they were acting beyond their mandate.
Mm.
And I'll be curious to see, you know, sort of where the boundaries are drawn around this sort of statutory authority for mm-hmm. central committees generally, not just here in Bonner County, but what that would mean statewide. Because, you could see the central committees being put in a position where they are able to just sort of cancel out people if they want, for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Chris, I think you were going to ask a question.
I was going to move on to one more. We're about out of time. We technically are out of time, but I thought it was really interesting the fact that some artifacts were found
right.
in that project up near MacArthur Lake to realign Highway 95 there, but the story didn't have any. What kind of artifacts were they? Is there more information to be had there?
So this is interesting. So I heard about this months and months and months ago, and I had been desperately wishing to write a story about this, and when I saw the press release come out, I was a little bit disappointed because I wanted to get more information, and mm-hmm. they're not releasing anything other than this press release. Essentially, what it boiled down to was that they were doing this highway work. They were excavating around MacArthur Lake, and they discovered some unidentified artifacts that, based on initial sort of analysis, indicate that human habitation was occurring in the upper Columbia River Basin 4,000 years previous to what we had already sort of thought. Like the mm-hmm. earliest known artifacts were from 10,000 BCE.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're looking at, 14,000 BCE.
And that puts it right up against
the Ice Age.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the general consensus among a lot of historians and archaeologists and anthropologists has been that, south of sort of the ice sheets, people couldn't get mm-hmm. here.
Mm-hmm.
So, now, the fact that we're seeing evidence that, yes, people were here at that time really does rewrite a lot of, everything
mm-hmm.
that we know about the peopling, so-called, of North America. And I am working on a follow-up to this. Jill Wheaton and I have been in conversation for months on this story. And I can 95% promise you that I will have a much bigger piece with a lot more detail in the mm-hmm. next couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So we're already working together on how we're going to do that. So mm-hmm. I can't wait to find out exactly what it was they found.
Yeah.
If it was tools, if it was
remains. If that number is really accurate, then, that would be concurrent with the time that the Ice Age floods were happening
right.
here. So it's kind of mind-boggling a little bit.
Yeah, you're talking 16,000 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah,
like that's crazy, and as a person who studied history, I have a master's degree in history. I know that when you find artifacts, it's never the first artifact. So whenever you find something, there's probably something before that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we've moved the goalpost a little bit, but there's probably more to be found.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine then one of the questions that I have that's kind of outstanding, and hopefully I can get answered, is what does this mean for further investigation in the area,
because mm-hmm.
you find it right here in MacArthur Lake. There's got to be other spots. So, mm-hmm. are we going to see a renewed interest in sort of archaeological investigations throughout
where the early people were living? Right. And so
it's such a tantalizing historical find that you want to pursue it. I hope.
Huh. And one other thing I'll just mention that I saw in the story that I hadn't realized before. The new bridge seemed really long, and I was like, they're kind of overbuilding this, but. As it mentions in the story, the the new span is 300 foot. It's to provide safe passage for animals underneath it. Mm-hmm. So it's an allowance for migratory or at least the movement of wildlife without having to get up on the highway.
Right. Well, and that's just cool. I mean, they won an award for this, you know, for the highest award you can get for a state transportation agency. And it was sort of shared with Jill Wheaton and ITD's project manager. Because it was such a well-done project and because it took account for so many sensitivities culturally and then sort of environmentally.
Chris, you're going to have to republish the Ice Age Floods book.
You're going to move everything back.
There's always a new edition.
Right? Yeah. You put some people on the cover watching the flood, you know, as go by.
There's actually a great there's a guy that Stev Ominski. He's an artist, and he's done a bunch of, you know, he's projecting what it might have looked like for the flood, but he does have one where there's some woolly mammoths that are getting washed away, which would have happened, I'm sure, in that time.
That's just incredible to think that there might have been people who actually saw it.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things we always talk about here locally in our history. Yeah. It's like no one saw this.
Yeah. You know, or swept up in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They probably would be because they'd be down in low areas, right, along the waterways. So,
We're over time. I do want to add, just because this is probably the last time we'll really be talking about the election. I don't know any final thoughts. I mean, we'll be talking about the results of the election.
We'll be talking about this for a while,
for 4 years, and it'll be a active conversation in coffee houses and bar rooms around the country. But in terms of on the air, a dedicated period of time that we're just talking about the election results, this may be it. So, at this point, 4 days on, 3 days on, what are you, any great wisdom coming to you, Zach? What does this say about our local electorate?
So your conversation with Rosedale was similar to the one that I had on Wednesday morning. And one of the things that jumped out to me, though, when I spoke with him was just looking at those turnout numbers, that enormously high turnout, and the absentee and the early voting being so big. And I asked him, I was like, well, you know, what's your theory? Like, why do we have this huge turnout? Because, I mean, we all know that during presidential elections, people are energized, they're jazzed, you know, it's like the big show. So they show up in bigger numbers generally. But this is so far beyond what we've seen in the past. I figured, like, well, I mean, are there other factors involved? And, you know, Rosedale was like, well, we're finally getting a look at who's moved here. I mean, you think about the last cycle, the 2020 election, COVID had just sort of happened. We all saw the huge influx of people that came to the county during the pandemic. They haven't had a chance to vote in an election like this yet. So here's our first introduction to the population that moved here from 2020 to 2024.
It's a demographic change. I mean, we all kind of guess that's what's happening, and this confirms it.
But now we have quantifiable evidence, you know, of who has moved here. And what kind of elections we might expect in the future. So that was kind of an eye opener to me. That I guess that's my big wisdom. Although I'm just sharing that wisdom secondhand from Rosedale, who is a very wise man.
Here, if you hold on just 1 second, I want to look at this here. In 2016, Donald Trump got 13,000 votes in Bonner County. It looks like that was his total in Bonner County, and this time around he got where's my tab with the election results, this time around he got 21,000 votes. So he added about 8,000 votes to his 2016.
That's a huge increase.
Well, there you are. I mean, and that it follows the pattern of what we saw nationwide, but it's more dramatic here. That quote unquote red wave seems to have splashed particularly high in North Idaho.
More like a tidal wave. So okay. I'll throw out one more little factoids that the Sandpoint Magazine, the winter issue, is just out today. It's around in supermarkets. It takes about a good week to get it out in full distribution, but people that are interested can find it in the supermarkets. We do have people filling those up actually every day because they go pretty fast. So
excellent.
That's my day job.
Okay.
For folks who may not be acquainted.
What's on the cover? What's the headline?
Oh, it's a gorgeous shot of Schweitzer. We went back and forth. It's always a big debate about what to go with on the cover. We had a lot of really cool ski shots, because one of the main cover stories is about the fact that Schweitzer is now running backcountry operations off the back of Schweitzer. Selkirk Powder is running new backcountry operations. These are not where they're chairlifts. They're run with snowcats. But the picture is just gorgeous because, you know, we see the lake and the little view of some of the backcountry and some people are about ready to dive in there. So that's what we got.
Yeah. Cool.
Lots of stuff going on this winter. A lot of stories inside about things happening around town.
The winter edition on Newsstands Now. Also on Newsstands, the Sandpoint Reader. A nice,
can't miss the red tie.
No, that's a nice.
Yeah. Speaking of covers, nice cover. we had three covers figured out.
Oh, yeah.
For election night.
Oh yeah, because you didn't know how it was.
We had
go.
No idea how it was going to go. Uh-huh. And, yeah, you know, this was the one that we had in the can. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It sticks out. I'll say that.
Yeah. Who's the artist on that? Or,
well, probably AI.
It was designed by Ben Olson.
Okay. Yeah. It was a cool cover. I thought, you know, yeah, or a, you know, it caught things, caught the mood correctly. Okay, we're going to do a little, we're going to transfer over to Otto's Eclectic Mix, and then Bird Note comes on at 9. Thanks for listening to 88.5 KRFY and North Idaho News of the Week. We'll be back next week with more.